Hey everybody, Bill Behrens here with another weekly report at Who's Slamming Who. As always, we'll start off with some rating information, starting with the March 3rd impact, which delivered a tremendous number, a 1.36, 1.8 million viewers. That was the second highest rating ever, the highest having been on early January 2010, the debut of Hulk Hogan. And prior to that, you have to go back to March 2009 when they delivered a 1.34. So all in all, a very good performance by everybody involved. However, the show itself sort of, while doing very well and achieving some record numbers, bounced all over the place in some areas that still suggest that the booking crew pay attention. Eric Bischoff, now the executive producer of the television program or product for TNA, I assume that means he'll have greater influence, even beyond whatever influence he had before on the booking, as Vince Russo continues in the key booking spot. The show opened up with a first quarter hour of a 1.52. However, what they did in that first quarter hour didn't retain the audience, and that was Dixie Carter's promo, Immortal interrupting Hulk Hogan's return, Fortune coming out to help Dixie Carter. That didn't seem to appeal to the audience watching, because going into the next segment, they dropped down to a 1.26. That grew back slightly in the third quarter hour to a 1.32, but then dropped off dramatically in the fourth quarter hour to a 1.17. So within the first hour, they went from a 1.52 all the way down to a 1.17. The 1.17 being more typical of the usual performance for TNA. So there was an element of rejection in the first hour after a large and almost record-making performance in the first quarter hour. Second hour ended up doing much better. As always, the fifth quarter hour jumped back, or as usually always not all the time, but most of the time. Quarter hour five ended up doing a 1.36. That grew in quarter hour six with Scott Steiner and Big Terry in the ring, delivering a 1.43, and then the beginning of the Matt Morgan-Hernandez match. That dropped off slightly in quarter hour seven to a 1.37, but then grew back in quarter hour eight to a 1.42. That hour ended with Sting making his entrance for the main event, and in the overrun, the Sting versus Jeff Hardy match, they grew back to a 1.48. So from first quarter hours, 1.52, to the very ending, 1.48, even though it was in an overrun, that in and of itself is still a good story, because they got the audience back that they started with. Distressing, though, were the drop-offs, particularly in the first quarter hour, and it continues to appear that in-ring promo spots don't hang on to the audience more often than not, whether it's because the people doing the promos are not as compelling as they need to be, whether the promos themselves are not compelling, or whether that's simply the wrong slot for it. It's become almost a given that these shows open up with talking, and I'm not sure that always the talking exactly is the best way to start the program, at least start it hot. And it appears that the return of Hulk Hogan, while it was part of a highly rated segment, didn't encourage audience to stick around into the second quarter hour, given a 0.26 drop-off, which is a very healthy percentage, approximately 15% drop, give or take, from quarter hour one to quarter hour two. So something, obviously, that still needs to be worked on, but still a lot of reason were you TNA management to celebrate, given the fact that with the hot shot of Sting's return, the immediate putting the belt on him, it was able to deliver an audience. Then it becomes what will happen next. And we'll find that out as I record this Wednesday, this Thursday's cable cast on Spike TV, which would be the rest of the taping that happened in Fayetteville, and whether the audience that was there for the return of Sting will be there after the return of Sting and as the new champion. Will that lead to greater numbers, or will it be like most of the hot-shotting that's been done with the title belt, similarly when Rob Van Dam won it, where it really doesn't do much to spike the numbers, and in fact, in the Rob Van Dam case, did very little at all. But just a total tangent, I found it very entertaining that back at that time, Rob Van Dam was quoted as referring to himself and Jeff Hardy as rock stars and suggesting that they were pushing the numbers up, which honestly was never the case, except extremely rare situations and isolated installations where they happened to have been part of a decently rated segment, but that wasn't what happened most of the time. And interestingly, the guy that's now referring to himself as a rock star is Charlie Sheen. So I guess that means that Jeff Hardy, Rob Van Dam, and Charlie Sheen are all rock stars. And what an interesting group to be part of. Anyway, moving on to additional ratings, WWE is on something of a roll themselves at this point. By the way, TNA's numbers have them well again ahead of last year averages, so that continues to be a good story. And Raw, the most recent Raw this last Monday, delivered their highest ratings since July 2009. So that's extremely impressive. Raw was a 3.92, up from last week's 3.81, and close to what they did 2 weeks ago when they did a 3.9. They had 5.8 million viewers, up from the 5.6 million of last week. And that's just an excellent performance, and they're trending well ahead on a year-to-date average from what they delivered last year and delivering numbers they haven't seen in several years. All of that, to me, encouraging. As I mentioned last week, overall, Impact's ratings up, Raw's ratings up, and SmackDown isn't doing that badly either. It delivered a 1.97, which was down from the record 2.31 of the previous week, but still delivered 3 million viewers, down from 3.5 million viewers. But that's still a substantial audience. If we add all the viewers together, which is really not how it works, but if you do it, simply because there would be redundancy in individual viewing across the board, but if you add them all up, there's about 10 million viewers if you don't count duplication of people watching all of the shows or each of the shows. And that's substantially up from last year, and it looks like it's going to be up from 2009 also. So we're seeing numbers that have not been this good in several years for all of the major wrestling companies on with major opportunities on television. And as I mentioned again last week, that's good for those of us in the seedy underbelly of wrestling, the indies, who either are, you know, trying to draw a crowd back. If more people are interested in the primary product, the big league product, for want of a better word, the better it is for all of us. Using an example, Ring of Honor just announced a sellout for their Atlanta shows, which is good news for them at Center Stage Theater. Not a gigantic building, but still, they had to put some bodies in there, and now they're opening up special seating near the ring up on the stage itself for additional revenue. So that's a sign that things are encouraging. I go to two shows regularly, NWA Anarchy and now NWA Rampage Pro Wrestling and Warner Robins. Last show for Rampage Pro Wrestling was dramatically up from the previous week. The last Anarchy one was down a little bit from the week before, but still better than they had been trending going into the last few months. So I'm beginning to see encouraging responses from the fans that are out there in terms of their interest in the professional wrestling product, both at the big league level but also at the independent level. And hopefully that will continue and help breathe a little bit of a breath of fresh air into what was becoming a downhill and somewhat stagnant business. Maybe we're all bouncing back from the financial troubles, but honestly, wrestling's downward track had preceded those. So good regardless to see audiences coming back to professional wrestling, both in the bigs and down, at least from my experience, in some of the smaller promotions that are also doing television. Anyway, moving on, as I mentioned, promotions sort of doing television. The one that continues to intrigue and entertain me is the Urban Wrestling Federation, I think it is, the one that keeps putting videos out that don't feature wrestlers that they've actually hired, either feature wrestlers that used to be on ECW or wrestlers they'll never get under contract that were in ECW, or, as most recently, simply gangsta rap stars. With the basic premise of this show, it appears that the gangsta rap stars who represent the various regions, you know that because they put themselves over by their area code. Again, here I am, 54-year-old white guy, just dramatically entertained by some guy that goes, and they all say the same thing. It's all, hey, this is your boy, and then fill in the blank rap star name from the fill in the area code. So, you know, this is your boy Briscoe from the 305, Opalaka. You know, that's how it works. And then, you know, just fill in the blanks on the rest of it. And it's pretty much the same promo for all these guys. They're going to keep it real because there's always keeping it real involved in these things. And sometimes I wonder if it isn't when keeping it real goes bad, one of my favorite segments on the Dave Chappelle Show. But moving on, the idea is each of these guys, with obviously no wrestling experience at all and no idea how to do any of this stuff, each of them is going to lead what in theory is a gang of wrestlers who will feud with each other as led by these gangsta rappers. And somewhere in the midst of all this, I'm assuming their music will be blasted. I understand simply from interactions some of the wrestlers I know have had with Steve Carroll that they want the stupidest form of wrestling possible, which would be dramatic hardcore wrestling, you know, blood, weapons, going through tables, chairs, you know, mass mayhem, you know, not working, rather the opposite, you know, the Carnage Cup death match kind of BS, where you wait for somebody to finally fulfill on the stipulation of dying, which is the inevitable reality of what a death match should be. And so far, nobody's ever fulfilled on that. And when it does, it'll probably take the business that's growing right down into the toilet again once the publicity hits, as it is already, obviously. We have politicians suggesting that our image overseas is tainted by professional wrestling in some way, which is interesting because I've seen some of the product that comes in from overseas, and it's not that exciting. So if we're trading wrestling and bikini-clad women for what comes over from overseas from some of these countries, I have a feeling that we're trading fairly back and forth. Anyway, back to this urban wrestling thing. So what you got here is, and let me just, you know, because I'm trying to figure the business plan out because, you know, that's what I do. And so you've got this older white guy, Steve Carroll, who is bringing in all of these black guys who each are gangsta rappers of varying degrees of fame or not, who are going to lead crews based on their area code, their turf, in battles which will be hardcore, bloody, and crazy. So what we have is we have a narrow category of rap, gangsta rap. Not rap in general, the one that would embrace a larger audience. No, the narrower one, the gangsta one that usually involves people getting shot and misogynist attitudes and, you know, that one. The one, the, you know, the lower end of the rap spectrum, potentially. Then they go into the wrestling, and rather than, you know, traditional wrestling targeted to the widest possible audience, instead, they're going to go African-American hardcore. Okay, so we get gangsta rap, a niche of a larger genre. We have African-American hardcore, a niche of a larger genre. And where are we going to showcase this? That's right, pay-per-view, which, at least statistically, is not at its highest buy levels in low-income urban communities, where potentially the target audience, the hood, might be. You know, again, I'm the 54-year-old white guy, so maybe I'm not intended to understand this business plan that was created by an equally old white guy, but I'm sure there's tremendous logic to it, and I hope at least that the guys that get hired get a decent payday, don't kill themselves in the process, and then at least three people watch this thing and they do a second one because then the people get paid again. But it'll be interesting to see how this thing flushes out because so far none of it makes any sense to me. But maybe it's not supposed to. I'm not supposed to understand everything in life. I just try as hard as I can. Moving on. This weekend will be NWA Anarchy, another television taping for that company in Cornelia, Georgia. Looks like another good show for them, and as we continue that road toward April 9th, Hardcore Hell, the last promoted show by Jerry Palmo before the sale to another gentleman who will continue promoting in the building. The exact timetable and specifics of that will be announced eventually. And I think that there'll be some more surprises on this weekend show, people returning that hadn't been in the company for a while. So if you're a fan of NW Anarchy Wrestling, either now or then, you're going to want to stay with us for the next few shows while we keep having members of the Anarchy family return and continue setting the plate for April 9th. Rampage Pro Wrestling, tremendous television taping last week. I mentioned earlier, highly attended, good, hot crowd all the way through, great matches all the way through, two different eight-man matches, one an elimination, one a single pin match, tremendous performances all the way around. The main event, though, Jimmy Rave, Mike Posey, Hot Like Lava, Crew Jones, Sean Banks taking on Bull Buchanan, Kyle Matthews, J-Rod, and Frankie Valentine was off the charts good. And just beautifully worked for a match that could have been an extreme cluster, given the fact that all four men were involved, or all eight men were involved throughout the match. Next taping for Rampage Pro Wrestling is the 19th, still at 7 o'clock on Saturdays. Then on the 2nd, that Saturday, there'll be a special noon taping in Warner Robins at Johnny G's for Rampage Pro. I believe it's going to be outside, weather permitting. Going to be highly promoted in the community, so it should be a very large and potentially new crowd for us. And then at 6:30 on the 2nd, Rampage Pro Wrestling stars are going to be putting on a early show, a special show at the Dragon Gate USA event in Atlanta starting at 6:30 p.m. Main event matches from RPW will lead into that Dragon Gate show, which I believe is an internet pay-per-view. Also, several Ring of Honor stars, Mike Posey, Corey Hollis, Rampage for Wrestling stars, Mike Posey, Corey Hollis, are going to be on the two Ring of Honor shows that are in Atlanta. Exactly what they'll be doing, if anything, is unknown at this time, but they've been offered an opportunity to be there by the booking management, which is awfully nice of them. So a lot coming up for the two promotions I'm involved in the most. We've embraced a new associate in the NWA, NWA Pro South Wrestling, that does regular Friday shows in Alabama that have been getting better and better, as have their crowds over the last little bit. So if you're in East Alabama where they promote, you're going to want to check out Pro South Wrestling. Jimmy Rave, Mike Posey, Corey Hollis, Chip Day, Kyle Matthews, Ace Haven, Brian Collum, and all of the other various stars that are there. Good crew, good show over there, and a new NWA associate. So look forward to hearing from fans about NWA Pro South. That's going to be it for this week, and I will be back next week with more stuff. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.